Hi, this is Kevin. I'm just going to try and summarize the Sunday school lesson from yesterday in a kind of a freak accident of sorts. We didn't get either of the recordings, so my recorder was low on battery. I think the battery's defective, actually, on my personal one. And then apparently some little boys went in and hit the space bar on the recorder in the sound booth, which effectively kept it from running. They basically paused the recording for the entire Sunday school class. So that's why we're doing this here. So I'll just try and give you a quick summary, and then we'll go from there. We're in Genesis 18, the first 15 verses. The verses after that are the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, or at least the events leading up to it. So it goes from Abraham and Sarah directly to, after verse 15, then it starts God telling Abraham what he's about to do to Sodom and Gomorrah. So there's quite a stark contrast here. We didn't mention that at all really in the lesson, but I just want to give you a heads up of what's coming. We start in chapter 18, verse 1 and 2, in that first box in your notes there. It says, "Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day." He was probably there just getting whatever breeze would come through the tent in the heat of the day. Sometimes you sit in a opening and you get a better draft, so I'm guessing that's what he was doing. "He lifts up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing by him, and when he saw them, he ran to the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground." Now this is different. Number one is God appears to Abraham. God appears to Abraham. This is a different type of appearing than whatever had happened for Abraham before, because God appears in physical form. He looks like a man now rather than speaking to him in a dream or talking to him like straight from heaven or whatever. It doesn't appear that that had happened before now. So God appears to Abraham here in a physical way with two other men, likely angels, that were with him, and they were on a mission, actually a couple different missions. God has multiple things going at once. He's a multitasker like we cannot be, but he's working with Abraham and Sarah at a very personal level. He's also working with Sodom and Gomorrah on the same trip a little bit later, and he's also holding the universe together. So God's doing all this at once. But God appears to Abraham. Now, if you recall, Abraham, apparently in Genesis 17, waited 14 years after Ishmael was born for God to appear. He had to just do the daily task of living for God without hearing from God for a long period of time. Well, in Genesis 17, Abraham is renamed, Sarah is renamed, they're given the sign of the covenant, which is circumcision, and then God says in chapter 17 to Abraham, "As for Sarah your wife, you shall not call her name Sarah, but Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name," verse 15. Verse 16, "And I will bless her, and I will give you a son by her." He specifies to Abraham in chapter 17 that Sarah will have a son with Abraham. And then in verse 21, it says, "But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time, this set time next year." So Abraham is sitting in his doorway. Let's back up a little bit. He's sitting in his doorway knowing that God now has set a time. He's never had a time before the last chapter. Now it's at this set time next year. So he knows something's going to happen, and something's going to happen soon. He might even be sitting in the door wondering how this is going to happen. Obviously, the anticipation is there. He's 99 roughly. Sarah's 89 roughly. He has no idea how God is going to accomplish this, but he's there knowing something's going to happen soon. And then these men appear. And God appears in a physical form, so he looks like a man. Okay, so God appears to Abraham, and he knows something's going to happen. Now let's look at number two here. Abraham offers hospitality. It just kind of tells him what happens. Verse 3 says, "And after Abraham bowed to the ground, he said, My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought, and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that you may pass by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant. And they said, do as you have said. So Abraham hurried to the tent to Sarah and said, quickly make ready 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree as they ate. So Abraham offers hospitality. I joked in class, he said, let me offer you a morsel of bread. And then he proceeds to make a small feast, including a good and tender calf, butter, milk, and bread that Sarah made. So it was quite a meal. I teased in class that if that's a morsel, I'm going to start asking for a morsel from now on. But it's very likely that this is what people would do because there were no motels or anything of that nature, by and large, out in the middle of nowhere. So it was appropriate and good to offer any visitors some kind of sustenance. Well, here, Abraham rolled out the red carpet, so to speak, and gave them some good hospitality, and they took it. They ate, and Abraham watched them eat. He wasn't obviously hungry. Maybe he just finished a meal or ate his hard bread and water or something, but when the visitors stopped by, he seemed to understand that they were more than just visitors, and he fed them really well. So nothing beyond that, just he fed the visitors. And then number 3, there's the first question that the visitors ask out of the 3 questions that they ask. Verse 9 says, then they said to him, where is Sarah your wife? So he said, here in the tent. So she was right behind him somewhere. It's interesting to note, and this is going to come up in the notes in just a little bit, but I think I have a little theory that they did not come primarily to see Abraham because he was already told about Sarah bearing a son. Sarah specifically being pointed out as of the last chapter that she herself was going to bear a son to Abraham, and it would be a son, and it would be within that set time, that year. So they come looking for her. They're to visit Sarah more than they are to visit Abraham. Now, I'll come back to that, but question number 1 is, where is Sarah? Now, that's number 3, but it's question number 1. Now, number 4, God declares his promise. Notice in verse 10, it says, and he, it's capitalized, we think it's God in the flesh. We call this a pre-incarnate appearance. You don't necessarily have to use those terms to kids. You can use it, but if you use it, you have to explain it. But it means that God shows up as a man. He's still God, but he shows up, and pre-incarnate means before Jesus became flesh. So it's pre-flesh appearance, but he's still in the flesh. It's someone could see and talk to. But he said, I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. Now, it's interesting that that's what God said to Abraham in chapter 17, verses 15 and 16. So, this is not anything new to Abraham. So, that's why I believe they came to inform Sarah of that. Number 4 is God declares his promise. These are points that you don't necessarily have to give to the kids, but I'm explaining it. The process is that according to the time of life, that appears to be a reference to giving Abraham and Sarah the ability to bear children again. Neither of them were able to produce children. They were too old. And I'll refer to a passage at the bottom of the notes in a second here. But the process is physical rejuvenation. God will bring their bodies back to a state of being able to bear children. The person is Sarah. Again, God had specified Sarah for the first time in the previous chapter. Remember, God had told Abraham that he was going to be a father of many nations now, father of a multitude. But he never really specified Sarah that I know of until the last chapter. And so Sarah offered Hagar and all that. I don't know why God didn't say it would be Sarah up front, other than that maybe it should have been assumed by Sarah and Abraham, because it's really a witness to the idea of marriage. Of course it would be between Abraham and Sarah, because that's who they were married to. That should have gone without even being specified in reality. So God, by not specifying Sarah, was really endorsing the idea of marriage, because of course it would be with your wife. So the person is Sarah. God specifies it now for seemingly Sarah's benefit. And then the product is a son. The process, physical rejuvenation, the person, Sarah, the product, the son. Number five now, Sarah heard the plan. That's just a statement. Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. So she was apparently, the visitors were now facing away from the tent, it appears. Abraham must have been facing the tent, possibly, or whatever. Sarah was there close enough. She had heard maybe, where is Sarah? So maybe she came closer to the door, but she was listening. She heard what had been said. Now, here's my theory, and it comes up again in number seven here, but it appears that Abraham had not told Sarah. He had been told in chapter 17, maybe the day before, maybe the week before, maybe the month before, but it was very recent, because it all happened within the year, and Sarah had apparently not been pregnant at this time. So it was within the first 3 months, because it said at this time next year Sarah will bear a child. So it was within 3 months of the time God appeared to Abraham in the previous chapter. But it appears that Sarah heard all this for the first time. And I'll explain why in a second here. But verse 11 now says, now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Number six is Sarah's present condition. Sarah had what we would call menopause today. She was unable to have children now. She had passed the point of being able to bear children. Now look at the passage at the bottom of your notes. It says here, this is Romans chapter 4, my favorite passage here. But I bolded some words here so you could see that it was not only Sarah, but it was also Abraham. Neither one of them had the physical ability to bear children anymore. Starting with verse 16 of Romans 4 at the bottom of the notes there. Therefore, it is of faith or belief that it might be according to grace, so that the promise might be sure to all the seed, not only to those who are of the law, talking about the Jews, but also to those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of his all. Abraham is physically the father of the Jews, but he's also spiritually the father of all who believe. And then it goes on to say in verse 17, as it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. So not only is it Abraham's physical descendants, but it's also Abraham's spiritual descendants that refers to. And then it says, in the presence of him whom he believed. And then it refers to God. And notice here, who gives life to the dead. And that's an interesting phrase that you'll see in a minute how that connects to Abraham and Sarah. But God calls those things which do not exist as though they did. He called Abraham a father of many nations and Sarah a noble woman. And then it goes on to say in verse 18, who, contrary to hope, it was against all hope. Abraham was 99, Sarah was 89. And we've mentioned before, why did God wait this long? Well, I think he did it just to the point of absurdity, to believe that someone that old would bear a child. And it was contrary to hope. And Abraham, it says, in hope believed, so that he became the father of many nations, according to what was spoken, so shall your descendants be. Now look at verse 19. And not being weak in faith or belief, notice what it says. He did not consider his own body already dead, since he was about 100 years old, probably about 99. It's rounding up there. But his body was dead. He couldn't produce children anymore. And the deadness of Sarah's womb, she was beyond the capability of bearing children. So there's God who gives life to the dead. He's referring to Abraham and Sarah. And he calls those things which do not exist as though they did. He's saying, you're a father of many nations. And even though that was not the case then, God states it, and therefore you can believe it. So verse 20 of Romans 4, he did not waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in belief or faith, giving glory to God and being fully convinced that what God had promised, what he had promised, that means Abraham would bear a son through Sarah, and then he would ultimately be a father of many nations, God was able also to perform, and therefore it was accounted to him for righteousness. So Abraham believed that God was the conception God. He was the God that could produce children out of a dead man as far as producing children is concerned, and out of the deadness of Sarah's womb, unable to produce children. So verse 11 of Genesis chapter 18 is enhanced by what we're told in Romans 4. Sarah's response on number 7, it's verse 12 of Genesis 18, therefore Sarah laughed within herself. Now I believe this indicates that she had not heard this before. I believe that Abraham had not told her. I honestly believe that he would have left her with more questions than answers. And if you think about it this way, she had been with him all of her married life, and in fact she was his half-sister. But she had left Ur with him. She had gone to the Promised Land 24 years earlier, and I'm guessing that he would have told her over and over that he was going to bear children. I think that was the pressure that she had on her, in her mind, to offer up Hagar to kind of solve that problem, because she was trying to make what God had promised happen for Abraham. Well, I think he was afraid to tell her more. This is just speculation, it's just me, but he did not tell her what God had just said to him, specifically about Sarah, about having a baby, and about having a baby within the set time next year, because I think he didn't know how to tell her. He wouldn't have known how to explain it, because the next question would be, how would this be? I mean, remember, he laughed at God in chapter 17, and then Sarah, maybe he was just trying to protect her because he didn't want to get her hopes up, because he'd been waiting this long, and yet he was waiting for God to tell her. And sure enough, God shows up in Genesis 18 to tell her. So Genesis 18:12, back to that verse. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And I put down there in the phrase, might Abraham not have told Sarah what happened in Genesis 17. And I believe it appears that this is the first time she's heard this. Specifically, that she's going to bear a son this time. According to the time in verse 10, she's going to return to you. God's going to return to you and Abraham and Sarah according to the time of life, the capability to bear children. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. And she, what did she do? She laughed within herself, probably quietly inside the tent. That doesn't mean necessarily somebody heard it or not. We don't know. But in her mind, she's reasoning, after I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And she has two responses. That's number 7, Sarah's response. Reason number 1, I am too old. After I've grown old, it's like over and done with. I'm already old. She's 89. And think about it, 89 years old, and you don't hear anybody 89 years old saying, hey, I'm pregnant. And yet, that it was that absurd back then as well. And notice reason number 2, he is too old. Talking about Abraham, my Lord being old also. Her response, and listen to this, her response was not inaccurate, really. It would have been funny if anybody else had told her this. It was funny. It's almost like I said, God waited till Sarah and Abraham got way too old. Not just, having a baby in their 50s, but in their 90s. And Abraham was ultimately 100 when Isaac was born. God waited till it was extremely funny to allow them to have a baby. And what I mentioned too is that they end up naming, God had told Abraham in chapter 17, you will call your son Isaac, which means laughter. And it's laughter, yes, because Abraham laughed at God, and laughter, yes, because Sarah laughed at God. But also, too, it's just, it's God making us laugh. And I emphasize that. Look, well, let's keep going here, and I'll bring it out. Verse 13, and the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Question number two, why did Sarah laugh? We looked at question number one and number three, where is Sarah? And then why did Sarah laugh? And it's funny because if anybody else had said it, it's like, what's so funny? Or, you know, everyone would laugh along with us. If we're going to have a child, you know, and when we're 99 years old and Sarah's 89. But what makes this difference is God had said this. And then it all of a sudden it says, no, I'm not kidding. It's, why are you laughing? And I use the illustration, and this might not work for the kids because they don't understand high dollar amounts. But I said, if I gave you a check and it was $1 million, and you would laugh because you know me, you know the kind of cars I drive and all of that, you would laugh. And what if I said, why are you laughing? It would change the whole attitude of your approach. And it would be like, it's the real thing. Okay? God had said this to Abraham in chapter 17 and now Sarah in 18. And it was funny. Don't fault them for laughing, except understand that God was saying it. So there's like a double whammy here. It was funny, but yet it's not funny because it's really going to happen. And notice verse 14 now, and this is huge because this is part of a song that you hear in the song, Nothing is Impossible. It goes, nothing is impossible when you put your trust in God, nothing. But anyway, the chorus goes, is there anything too hard for me? And that's where this comes from in Genesis 18. And it's interesting, but God is saying this in light of conception. People, you hear me on this soapbox all the time, but the reason I'm on the soapbox so much is everyone says the Bible is silent about conception. And I say it's not. God assigns himself to the category of conception, and he says, nothing's too hard for me. If God can give a 99-year-old man and an 89-year-old woman a child, why is it so hard for us to trust God or to believe that God is that powerful? People believe in God for anything but their children. But anyway, is anything too hard for the Lord? And the answer is no. And that's the response of the Lord here. The Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, sure, shall I surely bear a child since I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? Why would you laugh if God says it? We don't have to joke about it. And I'm not saying it's wrong to joke. I'll hopefully bring that out in a little bit if I remember. But it's not wrong to joke. But at the same time, you can believe what God says. Question number three, is there anything? That's what I put there because I didn't have enough space. Is there anything too hard for the Lord? Now, this reminds me, and I have this in your notes, with the same scenario that the angel said to Mary in Luke chapter 1. It says, You know, blessed are you among women, you're going to bear a son. And you shall call in his name the Son of God. He'll be the Son of God. And she said, how can this be since I do not know a man? There's been no sexual intimacy. There cannot be a baby. And he responds, God, the angel of the Lord, actually responds with, for with God, nothing will be impossible. The Holy Spirit will overshadow you. You'll conceive and you'll bear a son, for with God, nothing will be impossible. And it kind of ties in that same idea and the same realm of conception. And it's interesting, but we use those two phrases over and over in Christendom and forget what the context is. But both contexts refer to God's power in conception and God's power over conception. But is there anything too hard for the Lord? It's like, no, it could be a 500-year-old or a 1,000-year-old person. Okay, if God wanted to keep him alive that long, that's not a problem. If God can speak the universe into existence, why do we have such a hard time believing him for anything that he says? And here, the absurd, God lets Abraham get to 99, he lets Sarah get to 89, and then he says, now it's time to have a baby. Because then everyone, in essence, everyone will know that it's of the Lord. Just like I referred to, I think, 2 weeks ago, when God allowed the Israelites to get to the edge of the Red Sea, the Egyptian army is chasing after them. And then God says, now stand back and see the salvation of the Lord. He divides the Red Sea and lets them walk over on dry land and then destroys Pharaoh's army. God waits till the last minute, till the absurd, and then he says, okay, now look and see what I can do. That really seems to be the flavor, if you will, of what God is doing here. Now verse 14 goes on to say, at the appointed time I will return to you according to the time of life. And again, it seems like according to the time of life refers to the capability for Abraham and Sarah to bear children. If you want more technical, you know, the ability to have sexual intimacy and Sarah to actually ovulate and bear a child. Okay, to be able to release an egg and all of that. All of that that's involved and the physical mechanics would be there. And apparently, they were too old for any of that to take place. But God says, God repeats his specific promise. At the appointed time, that's number 10, God repeats his specific promise. At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Specifically, the process, again, in number 4, the process, physical rejuvenation, the person, Sarah, the product, a son. So God repeats himself in number 10, just what he said in number 4. Okay? He says, anything too hard for the Lord? And then verse 15, but Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh. And notice why. She was afraid. A couple of things. Number one, she realized maybe these are from the class. One student, I think it was Pastor Jim, it was Jim Long, said she had said this to the Lord. She had laughed at God. That might make you afraid. Okay? And laughed at the promise of God. So you're just almost kind of mocking God. And then third, maybe she was afraid that maybe God, after all of this waiting, would take back the promise because she laughed. We don't really know. It says she was afraid, and I think all those are legitimate. Who she laughed at, what she laughed at, and the promise. Who she laughed at was God. What she laughed at was the promise. And then the possibility maybe that God might change his mind. In her mind, wouldn't we think that? But Sarah denies laughing. That's number 11. And then number 12. And he said, no, but you did laugh. And God confirms that Sarah did laugh. He knew. But I want to just tie in this now. But you did laugh. Okay, nothing wrong with laughing. God doesn't punish her for laughing. He doesn't even scold her for laughing. He just acknowledges that she laughs. But it's interesting to note, and this is kind of a point that I put as an overall rider on the lesson here, and maybe it's light, maybe it's simple, maybe it's hard, but I believe God's ultimate result of his promises is to make us laugh. Not in some joking kind of way, but in a happy kind of way. Can you imagine a 100-year-old guy walking down the path carrying his little baby? Or Sarah, a 90-year-old woman, changing the diaper of her baby? That would just be comical anytime you saw it. I mentioned you ever go to the store. And they used to say, oh, where's your wife? Because they always thought Jane was my daughter. But you go to the store, and my daughters have gone before with their little siblings, and people think that that's their babies, you know. Oh, that's a nice little kid, and it's actually their little brother. But also, I've gone to the store, and people think my kids are my grandkids. Well, think if I was 50 years older. Certainly people would see it. And then when they heard that it was actually my son, they would be laughing. And think too, every time Isaac's name was called, Abraham and Sarah both would think laughter. That's what his name means, laughing or laughter. And it's laughter in a happy way. It's not a mocking way. God, in essence, says, go ahead and laugh. Because God can do the impossible. And what God does, ultimately, when he fulfills his promises, will make us happy. It will truly make us laugh. I believe that there'll be all kinds of laughing on the new earth when we're with the Lord. I believe that God did this on purpose. Like I said, the wait till the Abraham and Sarah got so old and before he gave him Isaac, because it just to the absurd, because then we just look and laugh and say, how great is God? And every time they called Isaac, they laughed, and they remembered the laughter that God gave to them, because after all of this waiting, now they're laughing with happiness. And I honestly believe that's kind of the underlying point of when God said, no, but you did laugh. But he didn't really say that's bad to laugh. He did say, why did you laugh? You know, but it's almost like it's because she didn't express why she laughed rather than the fact that she laughed. It's like, no, it is funny. Go ahead and laugh. And in fact, your son can be called laughter because that's it. God makes us laugh. God ultimately, when he keeps his promises, he brings us deep down joy and true happiness, which brings laughter. So that's kind of the overriding thing. So if you have questions, please feel free to email me. But please email me if you have questions or if you have thoughts about this. But it's a shorter lesson. It's a simpler lesson in some ways. You don't have to necessarily cover all the details that are in my 12 points. But just you can cover maybe the three promises that are what or three questions that were asked or whatever. You can just kind of narrate it somewhat and just emphasize the three questions and then the responses or whatever. For Sarah and then God or whatever, but it's just an easy lesson, but I think it's a really uplifting lesson. So hopefully you find it as enjoyable as we did. Thanks.